My sermon this morning is both a question and an answer, because the answer can be deeper than we know and hard to live into. Hard enough to live into that I'll be honest and say I am not at all where I personally wish to be regarding the answer. But because it's something many of us wrestle with and it's an opportunity that is always with us, it's important to lift this up. In some ways, this all comes down to work-life balance writ large, but I think maybe it's more accurate to say this is about life-life balance, ordinary life and spiritual life. Sabbath comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat, which means rest. And where does this idea of a day of rest come from? Well, the earliest reference is in Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 14, where it says, "But the seventh day is a Sabbath unto the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female slave, nor your ox, or your donkey, or any of your livestock, nor any foreigner residing in your towns, so that your male and female slave may rest as well as you." There is so much in that one verse, I could do a month of sermons on it easy. Really, I think a book on the details and implications in its original context, the way many different religions have built on it over time, not only, obviously, Judaism, which it comes from and still roots, and also Christianity, but also many humanist practices and some Zen Buddhist teachers who see connections between the awareness and intention that's part of Sabbath practice and the awareness and intention at the heart of Zen. But right now, what I have is this one morning and a necessarily narrower focus, but still, put your seatbelts on. What a way to define Sabbath, focusing not on, did you notice, the elite, but the underclass. Much more is said about children and foreigners and slaves. Now, Deuteronomy, of course, comes out of an ancient oral tradition. It was written around 600 BCE, but it comes and is a tradition that dates way far further back than that. And slavery had long been pervasive in the ancient Near East in every country and culture and people. Nobody was worried about it. You just hoped that your side never lost a battle. And everyone understood it the same way. The whole point has always been that a slave has no rights. Your life belongs to another, and they do what they want with you. Then came this extraordinary declaration that claimed access to sacredness for slaves. Not just the right to engage the sacred, but I would say, arguably by extension, some selfhood for slaves. And for foreigners, which means, of course, people who were not Jewish, who were not of themselves bound by, or in this case, liberated by, Jewish practice. They, too, were to have this day for themselves. And then even the oxen and donkeys, all the livestock, all creatures, everyone living as part of the interdependent web of existence, as we Unitarian Universalists like to put it, every living creature deserved a day of rest and time to be rather than do. Now that is some radical, justice-making, soul-affirming theology. Way back then. It is extraordinary. There was nothing like it. But of course, that is the very nature and purpose of Sabbath. As a concept, as an experience, it is necessarily extraordinary, necessarily outside the ordinary. Time unlike any other time. Time to be. which is still the essence of Sabbath millennia later. Because while Shabbat does mean rest, Sabbath is not just about respite. It is not just a time to zone out or to grab the quick equivalent of a nap for our spirit or to play with our phones. For my money, the best take on Sabbath is the book, The Sabbath, Its Meaning for Modern Man, written by the great religious scholar, Rabbi Abraham Heschel. It was published originally in 1951, and it has very gendered language, modern man. And that is pretty much the only thing I can critique about the book. It is brilliant and brief and accessible, which is a rare combination in theology. In it, Rabbi Heschel points out that religions often consecrate places and things that happen in those places. But for Sabbath, it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter where you are. It just matters how you are. Holiness is about how we spend our time rather than how we fill our space. Now, physics teaches us to think about space and time as two expressions of physical existence. They are inherently related, right? Space-time continuum, which you hear about in every science fiction movie ever. The space-time continuum, you may know, within which time slows or speeds up for an object depending on how fast it is moving through space. But for Rabbi Heschel, space is defined as what he calls technical civilization, something that we conquer or gain or a venue for power. And we exercise that power or make those gains by sacrificing, as he saw it, an essential ingredient of existence, namely time. And this is a problem because, as he wrote, to have more does not mean to be more. The power we attain in the world of space terminates abruptly at the borderline of time, but time is the heart of existence. End quote. This makes sense, right? Whatever the circumstances of our life, we all lead lives bounded by time, and nothing can change that. Now, when Rabbi Heschel suggests that we need to pay more attention to time, which is what observing a Sabbath requires people to do, he was not suggesting that we ignore or throw up our hands about worldly matters. He knew that exerting control of the world of space is also necessary in human living. That is what the other 6 days of the week are for. But he saw that those 6 days can dominate our consciousness enough that we lose awareness of the sacred realm of time. The sacred realm of time. He literally said, Sabbath is a cathedral in time. The sacred realm of time where, as he put it, the goal is not to have but to be, not to own but to give, not to control but to share, and not to subdue but to be in accord. That's the spirit of Sabbath. Because the higher goal of spiritual living is not to amass a wealth of information, but to face sacred moments. I think that's a critical insight for Unitarian Universalists, both because we are a worldly faith that doesn't always find as much time as we would like for spiritual experience. I hear that so much in our circles, including in this church. And also because part of what defines us is our passion for information and understanding. You probably, maybe, have heard that joke about the Unitarian Universalist who dies and comes to consciousness in the next life, and before them are two paths, and one is labeled heaven, and the other is labeled discussion group about heaven. Guess which one the Unitarian Universalist automatically starts to go down the path towards. Our commitment to knowledge and understanding is part of our DNA And it is part of why we embrace science, part of why our faith has always been expansive and respectful and progressive, but it is not the whole of our faith. Another part of our faith, something that keeps us from being simply a philosophy, is that many of us experience or seek experience beyond our knowledge and beyond our understanding. As Rabbi Heschel points out, putting words to spiritual experience, which is a very difficult thing to do, during a religious experience, what we encounter is not a tangible thing. It's more a spiritual presence. What is retained in the soul following that experience is some moment of insight, a moment that is treasure, because it transports us beyond the confines of measured time. So facing sacred moments and really engaging them puts us into that heart of existence and takes us out of measured time into sacred time. And those moments of insight, awareness, communion, or revelation, they are a treasure. They are a fortune. They do transport us beyond the confines of minutes and hours and schedules and ticking clocks. They are what our Unitarian forebears called transcendence. These moments of sacred experience are the harvest that we sow when we plant ourselves in sacred time and see what can grow in us, with us. What comes when we free ourselves of all the alarms and clocks and ordinary preoccupations to give ourselves divine rest? It is so elusive. It is so difficult to preserve and to protect. It is so challenged and denied by so much in this world of space that needs us to manage and fix and do. But remember the reading. When we do enter that sacred time, we enter this experience of sacred stasis, the heartbeat of repose, he wrote. What a beautiful phrase, the heartbeat of repose. May suffuse the mind and limbs of one's being and generate an inner balance poised on quietude and a settled spirit. We let go of the thousand pictures filling our heads and our minds, flying a mile a minute, even as our limbs and minds are weary, weary sometimes beyond reckoning. We give ourselves over and we let go of so much. And then the treasure we cannot compel, that we can only invite and make room for, the treasure then may come to us.
Thank you.
hear and cannot say. All we feel and cannot speak, how it moves in us and we move with it, body and soul. The communion of music, of voices in the choir and listeners, of all our spirits as the sounds wind around and through us like bands of color in the air. Sacred as any prayer, making a Sabbath within our Sabbath for all of us here in this time apart to receive the blessing and the sacred moment. Surely, music is one of those gifts that brings us into sacred time. We think, but we are beyond thought, and we feel, and we are beyond words, and we move to the music, and our movements are the only expression, the only response we can summon, even if it is only our breathing. We are not asleep, we are awake in a different way, in a way that we seek and welcome just as we do sleep, which is our biological answer to the long, hard day. Sabbath is our theological answer to the long, hard day. Making music, reading, writing, talking, thinking, holding silence, meditating or praying, walking mindfully, communing with the larger world in whatever way we can, and play. Remember play? Play, even for adults, getting off the phone and off the commute and off the clock and offline and out of meetings and out of the kitchen and out of the office, because it is time to be. Making love, the rabbis all agree, is a sacred Sabbath observance. So, of course, is study and learning. So is gathering with friends and family. So is lighting candles and worshiping in community. So is saving a life. Even when saving the life, the rabbis say, requires doing some of the things one is prohibited from doing on the Sabbath, that is a sacred act, entirely in the spirit of a Sabbath. And I think maybe sometimes engaging in Sabbath, the life we are saving, is our own. And maybe time doesn't just limit us, maybe it also reflects us. Rabbi Heschel talks about time the way a lot of folks talk about people. And it makes me think, would it help us value our time differently and hold it sacred and do better at making time for the sacred in our lives if we thought of time the way he thinks of time, as people? He writes, there are no 2 hours alike. Every hour is unique and only given at the moment, exclusive and endlessly precious. And we affirm that every human being has inherent worth and dignity. What if we thought that way about time? How would we treat time then? If we really leaned into that. Many of us need more Sabbath. And yes, I am including almost all the retirees. In fact, especially retirees, because so many of you tell me that retirement has not yielded the kind of expansive time that you anticipated at all. So many of us get so little Sabbath. Many get none at all. Many of us don't even imagine it. My hope is that we can at least think of it. But frankly, do a lot more than that, because the last thing we need is a discussion group about Sabbath. We need a path that offers us actual Sabbath, And by Sabbath, I do not mean an hour only that we hastily or occasionally grab, but a real practice, a real commitment, a whole day. A day that we don't just aspire to, but claim and live in as fully and mindfully as we could wish. So many of us wish for this, and so few of us manage it, and time is passing. So let's not wait. And let's not settle for carving out an hour, adding a wedge of time into what is already an overfull schedule, or worse, setting aside the time and in the end, using it to meet all the routines and commitments and urgencies that we couldn't have squeezed in otherwise. I have done that too many times to count. Am I the only one in this room? Rabbi Heschel figured we might do that. Back in 1951, he wrote pointedly, gendered language again, but listen to his point. Man is not a beast of burden, and the Sabbath is not for the purpose of enhancing the efficiency of our work. And hey, remember back in Deuteronomy? Even if man was a beast of burden, say an ox or a donkey, both famed, I will say, as beasts of burden, they are specifically prescribed, owed this experience of Sabbath. It is easy to agree with this in principle. I doubt there's anyone in the pews who actually disagrees with the principle. It is so much harder to enact, but if this is what we yearn for, and many do, then we have to find room to shift ourselves into a Sabbath-inclusive model. And that is not easy, but nothing radical ever is easy. And everything worth doing has to start somewhere, imperfectly and full of possibility. So I close with these questions for your own reflection, and not just reflection, but discussion. But not just discussion, action. Do you want some Sabbath in your life? And second, what would that look like for you? Music, meditation, playing, walking, reading, thinking, writing, talking, gathering, eating, making love, making food, making life. What do you want for your Sabbath? And three, what will you do to make room for your Sabbath in your life? And four, because this all comes down to time, unique and precious time we will never see again in our time-bounded lives. When will you start? Amen.